So my name is Lydia Bounty, and I'm from Spokane Coward Trade Con and part of the Communications Committee for Northwest Mountain Region. And I'm here with
Jake Sokcheski, Denver Center. I've been here for, this is my 10th year and my first year of training when all this was going on.
And my name is Morgan Farmer. I'm a trainee on the R side, coming up on my 4 years in the agency. Jake is my trainer.
She's my first trainee.
Well, let's start with you, Jake. How long, you said you've been a controller for about 10 years. Have you been anywhere else besides Denver Center? And, you know, what brought you to Denver Center?
So this is my only facility. And yeah, I got here in January of 13. And at the time, I came here via Minneapolis. I'm originally from Wisconsin. I went to MCTC, the old Mark School.
Okay.
And at that time, when we got hired, we were able to pick a couple states or whatever. So Colorado was on my list. And that's how I ended up out here in Colorado.
Did you want to see the mountains and stuff? Because I'm from Minnesota. And
yeah.
I was like, oh, I just kind of want to get out there towards those mountains and
ocean. Yeah, the mountains always kind of have been my calling. So I've always wanted to be out here, Colorado or like the West Coast. So I was happy that this is where I ended up.
All right. And then Morgan, what about you?
Well, I'm originally from Florida and I didn't go to school for this or anything like that. I just happened to apply. When Denver was on the list, I was like, oh yeah, mountains. I want to get away from the humidity and sea level. So I picked Denver and here I am.
So what do you think of the mountains?
I love them. They're beautiful.
Yeah, I agree. There's something about them that just draws me to them and outside. It's like you always kind of want to see what's on the other side of them. All right. So, well, Morgan, let's just keep going. How did you get interested in air traffic control? And how it sounds like you did the off the street hire, but you know, what sparked your interest in air traffic control?
Well, at the time I was going to school for political science and criminal justice, and I kind of just wasn't really interested in it. My heart wasn't in it. And I had a family friend work at Jack Center, and the bid opened and he was like, hey, Morgan, you should really apply for this. And I was like, let's do it. Why not? And I fell in love with it. And here I am.
That's cool. Did you know what it was before your family friend?
I had no idea anything about air traffic.
Yeah.
Really ignorant to it all.
All right. And then Jake, what about you? How did you, you know, get involved with air traffic?
Yeah, I like started going to school and then I saw like, oh, air traffic control and just kind of reading what you do and, you know, federal employment, stuff like that. So I was like, oh, that sounds good. So I was like, well, I'm already like, you know, partially there in Minneapolis. So I might as well just sort of maybe I'll just finish that up and then see what happens. And that's kind of like how it came about. And I almost actually didn't take this because I was still trying to finish up my degree at the U. And so I put it off a couple times and they finally called and said, if you don't take it now, we're going to rescind your offer. So I was like, all right. So I went and yeah, that's kind of how I'm here.
And you've been happy about it ever since. Yeah, I kind of remember when I went to university in North Dakota, but they were like, if they offer it to you, you take it because they might, you know, kick you off the list or you might not be able to get back on or whatever it might be. So were you going to University of Minnesota?
Yeah.
When you were there? Right. Well, do either of you currently serve in any NACA roles locally or nationally?
No, I was Area 1 rep for 4 years and then, I'm not involved right now. I just needed a little break, so.
All right. And then Morgan, I'm assuming since you're in training and stuff, you're not.
I know.
Yeah, it's always best just to, you know, put 110% into training, get through that and then take on stuff. So how long have you two been working together as a training team?
He's been on all of my R sides. We started in November of this last year on my R sides.
Yeah, and then COVID, didn't we like have to take a break because of COVID?
And then right after Christmas, they stopped training and then they started it up again around President's Day in February. So we took a little break. But for all of my R sites, he's been my primary trainer.
I bet that was, I'm trying to imagine what it would be like training through COVID. I mean, I thought training was difficult enough as it was without a worldwide pandemic going on and stuff like that. Yeah, what's that been like? I don't know if you want to touch on any of that.
Had its ups and its downs. You just have to be patient with it because we come into work some days and like, oh, training is stopped because of numbers.
Yeah.
Or so you just have to be patient. We're almost to the finish line. We're on our last two R sides. We could.
It's
definitely
awesome.
Great because they wouldn't allow us to train, but they were fine with, you know, people sitting next to each other, you know, on sectors and on D sides and stuff. And so many, you know, some of these agency decisions, you kind of scratch your head. And I mean,
yeah.
I, you know,
didn't
want to go
sense.
Too deep in there. Yeah. It's just like, ah, geez, we just want to get through the
trip. You're just itching to.
You know, because it's hard on her because starting, you know, you get sort of ramped up and then all of a sudden just to stop. And then she's sitting on a D side for, you know, like months. Like, that's not helping her at all.
All right. So we talked about the Denver area kind of and how that sparked both of your interests, kind of move closer towards the mountains. And what about the Denver airspace that you guys work? You know, what, you know, do the mountains play into some of the unique and challenging situations that are in your airspace? Do you want to kind of walk us through what your airspace is like?
So our airspace is very unique, our particular airspace in Area 1, because we're all low altitude and we're all mountainous terrain. And in the email, you know, I said we're just like a mountainous TRACON. That's kind of what we are. Like we have everybody coming to and from Aspen, everybody coming to and from Vail, Gunnison, Crested Butte, you know, that area, Montrose, Telluride, Hayden, Steamboat, right? Yeah, it's all ski country. And so you get, so, you know, sometimes we're running rates that, know, on a slow day at Denver that, you know, like sort of rival Denver when we're really bouncing in the wintertime. But then also part of that is like with the TRACON, right, you get your professional pilots, but you get a lot of GA pilot. And that's when, you know, some of these mixtures don't work very well. Mountainous terrain, you know, inexperienced pilots, and then the weather is just so unpredictable. And that's, I think that's the uniqueness. And then the amount of volume, putting all those things together, that's the uniqueness of our particular airspace.
What about icing? I feel like, you know, there's a lot more potential for, you know, icing and extreme icing in airspace like you're talking about with weather conditions and, you know, mountainous terrain and stuff like that.
Yeah, so I mean, like some of our airports like Telluride and Leadville, they're almost 10,000 feet. I think Leadville's the highest airport in the nation. And so, you know, all of the rest of our airports as well, right, they're at, you know, 7,000, 6,000 feet. I think Montrose is like 5,500. I mean, so you're already like starting, you know. And it really does. Like the scenario that I described to you in the email was one of those days, kind of like the day that we're talking about today, is where when it sort of comes out of nowhere and when it hits. And it's like, it's everybody. And if you're not prepared for it, if you're... plane isn't prepared for it and you're not quick, you know, you can go downhill really fast.
Yeah, so these pilots are starting out at these higher altitude airports where it's already impacting like their performance, and also the weather can be more, they're already kind of up in it versus operating at sea level, it sounds like. So
No, and like another part of that too is, you know, we also get, you know, like anywhere else, but especially with all these destination airports and destination, you know, cities, a lot of pilots aren't from the area, so they don't know the conditions as well as the local pilots, you know, pilots from Texas and Mexico and California, where they're not dealing with that type of weather, you know, on the reg.
Probably sneak up on them.
Exactly. And it sneaks up, and then all of a sudden, you know, they're getting behind the airplane. Everyone's just trying to like catch up to keep, you know, them safe if they're not prepared for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it is kind of a crazy thought. I know me just flying, we've flown over Colorado before, and it is crazy for maybe people that fly more down at sea level and not in the mountains. But like, you know, we'd be flying at 12,000 feet and the ground below was just 2,000 feet below us, you know, because it was 10,000 foot. It's just kind of crazy to, like look at your altimeter and be like, I'm actually up 12,000 feet, but this mountain below me is at 10. Yeah. All right. Well, take us back to that day when you were working, and, you know, maybe just kind of set us up for, you know, maybe what had been going on right before and what you remember about the day being like, and then we can get into, you know, what happened and how you reacted.
Well, it was actually our first session of the day. So immediately when we sat down, I think as soon as we sat down, the pilot came up and was like, hey, we're getting severe icing. And so that was the start of it. So we had severe icing in the vicinity of Montrose, and just sequencing in, it was all good. And then we had noticed that Fort Juliet Sierra started dipping below the terrain. Our MIA is 12,400 there. So that's where things started getting a little serious.
And what type aircraft was it?
It might have been a twin Cessna. It was a...
Yeah, I think it said it was a 340.
Yeah, because...
That sound right?
Yeah. We were sequencing him in with, like, there was Southwest, I think.
Yeah, I think he was right behind the United.
United, so that's what I remember from it.
Yeah, and especially training as well. That's a difficult thing to learn. And, you know, even seasoned CPCs have a tough time with that when you, when you've got, you know, all these jets and you're trying to sequence a little twin Cessna or a little Cessna or whatever Piper into the airport. And then you throw in some weather in there, like in this situation, you can only have them on vectors for so long before even yourself, you're starting to feel like this is potentially going to get, you know, into a hairy situation because, you know, you just want everybody to get to the airport as quick as possible. But when you have those speed differences and different performance differences, it definitely adds a layer in there, you know?
Yeah. And maybe for those people that don't work approach or center, it's good to point out that, like, you as center, you can only get them so low, you know, even getting them to your lowest vectoring altitude isn't low enough in a lot of cases to see the airport. You really have to get them on an approach to get them down like that. But a pilot being in a severe icing situation isn't the most conducive for them to, you know, be able to get on an approach like that. Yeah. Right. I mean, they got so many things going on. And
exactly. And they're screaming for lower. And so his, or this situation, if memory serves me well, is 3-5 approach, yeah, to the southwest, five, yeah. And the minimum altitude is 13,000. And I mean, that was like, put them right in the soup. Mm-hmm. But that's, I mean, there's nothing else, you know, there's no other option for that approach.
Okay, so you guys both sat down, it was your first session of the day, you kind of, one of the first aircraft you talked to and said, hey, I'm getting severe icing, which, you know, I'm assuming is a big red flag for you both. My question was, how did you first recognize the pilot needed help? Did they, you know, did they say that, come out and say that right away? Or I think you said you started noticing he was a little bit below your minimum vectoring altitudes and then later said he had severe icing.
So severe icing was reported in the vicinity, and so whenever he checked on, we let him know that there was severe icing. He didn't say he was in the severe icing until we noticed him not holding his altitude. So we had crossed him at the fix, the initial approach fix, at or above 13,000, and we noticed he was at 12,700, and the MIA in that vicinity is 12,400. So we, you know, gave him the safety alert, the terrain, check your altitude. He said that he couldn't hold altitude, so we gave him a clearance to 12,400 and then gave him a vector to the north so we could get him to a lower altitude because the MIA up north is at 11,000. So our plan was really get him to a lower altitude. Maybe he'll be able to see the airport or we can vector him onto the approach, but just make sure that he's safe and not in severe icing.
Yeah. And then so what happened next? How did...
So, yeah. So like for me, standing behind Morgan, right, like you as... You know, you gain more experience, and especially anybody that works low altitude, you know, TRACON and, you know, center that works low altitude like us, that's just all we have. You sort of have those sort of alarm bells that are going off in the back of your head. You know that the reports for severe icing are there, and then you kind of just get a feel of when someone is starting getting behind the aircraft. And so that's kind of like for me sitting behind her, like I could feel that sort of already. And so once he started going below the terrain, like, so there's a valley that's just like, and again, this is experience. Like, I don't know if Morgan at the time knew that because you were maybe a month
on the R side.
Yeah, a month on the R sides maybe. Okay. But there's a valley that's south of Montrose that basically almost goes from like the Ouray area, like maybe starts in that area, like just east. And then, you know, the valley goes into Montrose. So even though, you know, and obviously the MIAs are 2,000 feet above the terrain, but as a seasoned controller, like we sort of know is sort of safe. And actually, on one of the approaches into Telluride, the MSA in that area, I mean, that was like, it's like 10,000, right? So you're sort of just like, in my head, like you're going like, okay, point them this way and you can start descending them because you know that it's a safe altitude. Even though it's below the terrain, it's a safe altitude. And you know that like he just needs to get out of this. And so that's kind of like, that's where my head is at. That's where our heads were at when we were like, start flying this way, know the safer area, and we're just going to try to get you out of the icing.
And I think we started asking the United, hey, what altitude could you see the airport? Because the United was still approached on the
right.
RNAV.
Yep.
We were like, hey, when were you able to see it? And then we knew that if we got for Juliet Sierra to a certain altitude, I think it was 1,000, he'd be able to get the field.
Right.
Yeah. And so I'm just thinking about this too. Like you guys, you not only have going on this emergency, but you're also in a training situation. So there's lots of layers of complexity to that too, where it's like, you know, you want the trainee to, you know, get the most experience out of it as possible. But then, like you said, Morgan, you were working that position for a month. So I'm sure it's like, okay, when do I step in and when do I? So it sounds like you two as the training team did a lot of teamwork to help get this aircraft down safely. I'm curious about like the teamwork going on around you too. Was there, you know, when it started happening, did you communicate? What was it like? I'm assuming you communicated it like, you know, with the CSC or the controller next to you, and maybe there was some teamwork that happened. Do you want to touch on anything there?
So I think it was, I mean, you know, kind of how it is when something's going on, everyone's ears perk up and everyone gets, you know, yeah, sort of they should stop, right? So everyone knew. Soup kind of walked over and everyone just, you know, but as far as, I mean, it was basically just her and I, like we, you know, it just, you're so like laser focused. And then, like I said, you're just thinking of like weird things, like, right, like that MSA, like a tire ride, like how I sort of thought of that, like, I don't even know, right? You just, it's what they say, right? I mean, like you fall back on your training. So somewhere in my training, you know, I have no idea. I'm sure somewhere in my training, you know, someone's like, hey, you know, this is the valley. There's, you know, this MSA is here. That's what they're for. Mm-hmm. And just you're making it, you know, and then whenever I took over, you know, you're it's just a judgment call. But like you said, we're, you know, obviously I'm trying to let her work through the problem up until, you know, you got to go to the line, and right, where's that line? Nobody knows where the line is. If you go too far, get to go to bed at night and say, well, I let that go too far. So
yeah.
And if you go too early, then she's not getting the proper training and not seeing the scenarios enough. So that was probably like two, like my head, that was hard because I'm trying to keep this guy flying his airplane. Now, Morgan did a great job, like staying calm. And I've always said that she has really good instincts. And so some trainees might have just folded, right? Like, I mean, just to be real, like it's true. Like with their hands up, I don't know what to do anymore. Right. She never did that. She got with it.
So Morgan, is there anything specific that contributed to you reacting in a calm and thoughtful way in order to get this guy in?
Something that Jake has always told me, and this advice that he gave me was, when it comes to this job, when you're training, when you're like, oh, should I do this or should I do that? Do whatever allows you to go home and be at peace and know that you did your best. And even to this day, people, they'll give me crap because they'll be like, oh, you didn't need to do that. Like, you're going above and beyond for that VFR mm-hmm. aircraft thing. And when I tell them, I'm like, something were to happen, I know I'm going to be able to sleep at because I did my best and I stayed calm and I was just present. And that advice that Jake gave me, I think about it every day.
Jake, did you realize that was one of your messages you imparted to her?
So I guess I didn't realize that stuck with her. So, but I'm happy that it has, because it's true. I mean, and when I told you in the email about, you know, comfortably living in the gray, that's what ATC is. And I know, like, trainee, that's really, it's really difficult because for the most part, you just want black and white. Like, tell me what to do, and this works every time. That's just not how this works. Not at least in our airspace, yeah. Right? Like, it's just, it's not. Yeah, I'm happy that has stuck with her, because bad things do happen. Like, people fly into the mountains and they don't fly out. And if you're too rigid, or if you're too focused on, I don't want to say focused on the rules, because we all have rules that we have mm-hmm. to follow, but if that's what you're most focused on, I mean, there are human beings that are in the airplanes that are flying this. If they're scared, you know, they might not know what to do. They might know what to do, but they might not. And if you're confident, if you're calm, if they can take that from the radio, that may be all what they need, right? And so,
yeah. I mean, I think what you're saying is also like, you're kind of being the helper, the person that you would want to talk to if you found yourself in that situation, right? You're kind of thinking of all the things.
You know, they're like, well, you never declared an emergency over the line. And it's like, I'm not doing that. Like, he knows
he's in an emergency situation.
Yeah, exactly. I don't need to tell him that. But those are the types of things when I talk about being comfortable in the gray. Because if something bad happened and then you go home at night and you're like, dang, did I really like mess with his head? I'm declaring an emergency for you over the frequency. Mm-hmm. To me, that's extraneous.
Yeah. And I think when you said earlier too about like focusing on the black and white, I think what I was thinking of while you were talking about the gray, it's like, if this pilot can't hold altitude and they're going to descend, like, you're going to make the best decision based on all the information you have in the moment. And you're thinking, okay, if he's going to be below the MVA in any of these areas, I know this one area will be the best area because of my knowledge there. It's lower. I can see the MSA, the minimum safe altitudes and stuff like that. And so that gray area, yeah, I can see becomes so important, especially when things don't go to plan, and yeah, experience plays into that. You had said earlier that this wasn't, you know, your first emergency in your airspace that you've been working, and you had some previous experiences. How do you think all that plays in? I guess for Morgan, I'm thinking, if I'm in training and I'm experiencing these with my instructor, like, that's a great way to, yeah, to gain experience, right? And then you can ask the questions and you can go off of what you did it in the past and grow from it. But what do you think?
At the time, it was like month one, and I'd already experienced like 4 or 5 pretty serious emergencies as a trainee. And I, you know, would talk to my other trainee friends in different areas. None of them, even to this date, have had any emergencies by my first month. And at the time, me and Jade joke about like being traumatized together and trauma bonded. At the time, I was like, dang, I really wish I didn't have so many emergencies, but looking back, I am very grateful that I was able to have those emergencies and those learning experiences with someone behind me, and that the first emergency, the first serious emergency that I've had wasn't by myself, you know? And just having those emergencies with Jake, those multiple emergencies that we've had, I've learned and taken so much away from them. I've learned so much. But if we were to walk in right now and have a session and someone declared an emergency, I feel like I would be very prepared, a lot more prepared than a lot of people in the center, just because I've had so much experience with them.
Yeah. And I can see how you guys touched on the kind of the idea that you're bonded through those major experiences. I mean, to me, it seems like, yeah, you're like in those situations, you're all of your senses are heightened, you know, you're trying to do the best that you can and you're laser focused. So you're communicating with each other, you're kind of like reading each other and you're like supporting each other and you're kind of the ones that know what the other one's gone through. So you're there for each other to debrief as well. So I can see how that would really create a bond that's strong and helpful in the operation. So, all right, what would you say is your biggest takeaway from this experience? I mean, I know you kind of answered it in a lot of ways before too. So if you don't have a answer or you don't want to give up, that's okay too. But I just want to give you the opportunity in case you had a takeaway you wanted to share.
I mean, it just goes back to the advice that Jake gave me. I think it just solidifies the fact, do whatever you feel is best, whatever you can do, even if you may be breaking some rules, do whatever allows you to be at peace, to walk away knowing you did your best. You know, don't be scared of the rules. Just, I don't know, just do your best. Do whatever allows you to sleep at night and walk away knowing that you did everything that you could do.
Yeah, because in an emergency, I mean, the rules still apply, but they maybe apply in a little bit different way where we know we're not going to be able to follow every single one if the pilot can't, you know, if their plane can't perform that way. Yeah.
I think for me, it was a positive, you know, obviously it was a positive outcome, and that, you know, that's all that matters. Scary, and that they're awful when they happen. But like with so much in aviation, you know, how we learn things, you know, unfortunately in aviation, like, you know, we learn by tragedy, and that's how it's been throughout the years. Obviously, you know, in the last 10 or 15 years, that's not so much, but fortunately this is a positive outcome, and you know, our airspace is undoubtedly safer today because when Morgan, you know, she's almost checked out, when she becomes a CPC, she will be, I mean, she's probably better prepared for situations like this, I mean, than most people in the entire center. I mean, some people go through their entire careers and they don't even have an emergency. She's had legit 2 saves already, like legit saves. This being one of them, and then the other one at Durango that I was telling you about. Mm-hmm. So, you know, unfortunately, these things happen, and this is a positive outcome, so that's good. But the airspace is safer when these things happen, and now she has that experience that, you know, she'll have those instincts already.
Yeah. Well, and thanks for opening up about, you know, and sharing what happened, because I think we learn from the tragedies in a big way, but we also learn from, like, you know, sharing experiences and like I'm learning something from listening to what happened to you guys and how your thought process was and how you reacted. And so I think for the people listening too, they'll be able to get a lot out of that as well. So yeah. Okay, so what does this Archie Award on behalf of NACA given to you both for our region mean to you or represent or anything like that? I don't know if you have any thoughts there.
For me, I know these last, you know, just being involved. I mean, part of the reason why I needed a break from everything was COVID, right? Like, COVID took a toll on all of us. COVID took a toll on the union. It took a toll on controllers, you know.
Morale.
Yeah, morale. Like, you know, everyone's working 6-day work weeks, and we never, you know, we haven't been able to, some of these outlets that we've had in the past, like CFS and conventions. I mean, the convention was put off how many times? Some of those outlets that we've had to sort of recharge your batteries haven't been there because of COVID. And the recognition, because of those things have been taken away, the recognition hasn't been there. And I think that's, like, we have a lot of excellent controllers here at Denver Center. And I know, like, sometimes people want to say, oh, you're just a center controller. And I'm really proud of the people that I work with. I'm proud of the work that we do here at Denver Center. I'm proud of the work that we do in Area 1. And I'm proud of all the controllers here. And as far as NACA, I'm extremely proud to even be just a little part of all this. And we, I think, can all agree that we probably don't get the recognition, you know, that from, you know, we don't get the recognition from the agency. And I'm so happy that NACA is there to fill in the void. And I'm so happy that we're able to do that, you know, do it this year, you know, get back to CFS, getting back to doing the things that we do as a union, and sort of just trying to get back to, you know, more togetherness, more, you know, hey, we're in this together. Let's get back to some of those things. So I'm thankful that NACA is there to be that for all of us.
Yeah, I love that. And I think I saw you're both going to be at CFS this year. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that's awesome. Morgan, did you have anything you wanted to add on that?
I think Jake summed it up pretty well. Much.
And Jake, weren't you, I wanted to research this a bit before, but weren't you a part of a previous Archie, like a runner-up for our region, perhaps?
Yeah, I won an honorable mention. I think it was just prior to COVID, 2019, maybe.
Isn't he amazing?
Yeah, well, I remember asking you for your quote back then, and I feel like you said something about teamwork and stuff, and just that, like, you two, who was it with?
Royce Bockelman.
Yes, and you two had worked together for a while, and you kind of, you know, understood how each other worked, and you were able to just, you know, kind of read the other one's mind. And
no, it's true, and I feel like it was very similar, because there's a couple people, you know, that, you know, you just kind of know your sort of people that you feel sometimes what they're thinking. With Morgan too is kind of the same thing. I mean, part of that is because we're training every day, right? But you get to know that person, like their sort of tells and their cues. So I feel like, you know, for both of us, it was a good situation. You could feel like, okay, how far can you let her go? Even though we were working, you know, training together for like a month or whatever, like every day, like, you know, we just spending that amount of time training and, you know, all the fun stuff with training, like arguing about rules and whatever, right? Like, you sort of know how far to let things go. So that was, you know, with us, like, I knew, I was like, okay, I know she's got this, you know, she's.
Was there anything that you guys think I should have asked that I didn't, or anything that you want to add before we close this out?
My last probably thing is, I do want to thank, you know, NACA. I want to thank Alex Navarro.
Yeah.
You know, this has been a tumultuous couple years with COVID. And sometimes it's hard on all of us. And I just want to thank, especially, you know, Alex and the rest of the executive board for making this thing happen. Yeah. And we're excited to be there to celebrate.
Yeah. Like you said, that through COVID, and I think you touched on, you know, that recognizing that morale has dipped a little bit. But we were able, being NACA, we were able to kind of all pull together and get through it, you know, even on the hard days, and kind of the lights at the end of the tunnel, we're starting to get back together again. And yeah, I think the CFS will be great to bring everyone back together. I don't know about you, but for me, it kind of put in perspective, like, I've always appreciated CFS and the ability for us to all get together, but maybe, you know, doing it year after year, I took for granted a little bit that opportunity that we have. I mean, that the agency supports it so much, that we're able to get excused to attend, and then that all the people that are there are there, from agency to contractors to, you know, NACAVists and all that stuff. And so now, having not had it for a few years, I think I'm realizing like how much I'm itching to go and how special it really is that we have that opportunity.
Yeah.
And one thought that I was thinking just listening to the two of you and the experiences that you've had together. And like you said, like some multiple emergency situations, two saves, stuff like that. It just makes me realize, like, I think it's easy. We go to work every day. We're air traffic controllers. We're kind of, it's what we do. And like you said, many of you are working 6-day work weeks. So it feels a little different going in on your RDO to work when, you know, you would otherwise have that time with your family and stuff like that. And it can take toll. But I think for me, listening to your story and, you know, trying to learn from it and reflect on my own experiences just reminded me, like, how special it is that we get to be a part of this unique and small community of people that get to do the job that we do every day, like the air traffic control job. Like, it's pretty cool. We get to talk to the planes every day. We get to help them when they're in need. And we get, think of all the people that we get safely their destinations. So I guess when I was asking you guys about the award and what it means and stuff, I was just thinking about some of those things. Like, that's so cool. You guys are, you know, out there plugging in every day and doing what you do for the facility and the public, and also for NACA. So thank you.
Yeah, well, and it's true. It's like, you know, we have so many controllers like around the country, right? They're all doing really good work, right? And you only hear about the bad things. You only hear about, you know, someone doing something, whatever, right? Like, never hear about the good, you know, everyone coming to work every single day, doing what they're supposed to do, going above and beyond, being a part of something bigger, like the NACA members. Yeah. And so, you know, they just don't get, not everyone gets that recognition. I mean, I'm extremely feel blessed that this is a positive outcome and we're getting recognized for this. And I'm, you know, so grateful for that. But yeah, every single day, everyone just comes to work, do what they do.
Professional, dedicated.
So when we get to do stuff like CFS or whatever, I know it's hard to get off the schedule, but you get to at least, you know, go hang out with other people that are going through the same stuff that you're going. And it just, you know, feels good to be part of something bigger.
Yeah. And get filled up. So Morgan, will this be your first CFS?
I'm excited to meet the community and to connect. It's such a cool union that we have. I'm so grateful for it.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited for you. Thank you, both of you, for taking the time to do this.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. And I hope you have a great day at work.
Yeah, you all too. Right. Or have fun on vacation. Yeah.